Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Rising Above Ministries podcast. I'm your host, Becky Davidson, and I am so glad that you are joining us for this week's episode. Now, if you have ever been to an in-person event that we have hosted here at Rising Above, then you have seen the handiwork of today's guest. Chris Pierce has been on our team here at Rising Above as a volunteer and as a member of the staff for many years, and she works behind the scenes to plan and execute so many of the events that we do for special needs families. And she also leads one of our community groups for siblings, and she does a beautiful job of that. Now, that group meets every other Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Central, and you can find out more about her group for siblings of individuals with special needs on the Rising Above community page at risingaboveministries.org. Not only is she a huge gift and asset to us here at Rising Above, but she also is a special needs mom. And today she is going to share some of her journey as an adoptive mom to a daughter who is deaf. She's going to share some of the challenges that her family has faced and share ways that we can come alongside those who are deaf or hard of hearing. And we are so thankful for Chris, and she has some great wisdom that she's going to share with us on this episode today. Hey, Chris, thank you so much for joining me today for the Rising Above podcast. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule here at the office to have this very important conversation with us about adoption and about how to come alongside people who are deaf or are hard of hearing. And so I'm excited to have this conversation and share this with our listeners. So you have been part of our Rising Above family, oh my goodness, for a very long time, like since probably 12 years, maybe?
I think so.
Yeah.
I volunteered for about 5 or 6 years before coming on staff.
And then you came on staff with us, and I'm trying to remember your like official title. Because we always have these really great sounding titles, you know, because we pay in titles, you know, so.
Yes. So my current title is Director of Community and Outreach.
Yes. Director of Community and Outreach. And so yes. you handle all of our events, anything outreach that we do here. You and Kim work together on a lot of different things. And so you are a tremendous asset to us here at Rising Above. And so share a little bit about your family, because what I love about our team here at Rising Above is that, you know, you and I are both special needs moms. And so share a little bit about your family, who's in your family, and what that looks like.
All right. Well, my husband and I have been married for 30 years. His name's Rob. He's also part of the Rising Above team. He's the men's ministry director. And we had two sons, Brian, who is currently 26, and David, who's 23. They're both married now to wonderful, fabulous women. And then we adopted Courtney and Elenis when they were 9 and 10 years old. They're currently 24 and 23.
Wow.
So
we won't tell how old we are. Keep our age, yeah. You know, yeah.
Keep that under wraps. But yeah. I am a Mimi now. I have a new grandbaby. Courtney just had her first child, which is my first grandchild. So I now have a little granddaughter.
I'm
a Mimi.
Love it. Love it. So you shared a little bit there about you adopted your two daughters when they were how old again?
We adopted them when they were 9 and 10. We fostered them for about a year and a half before we were able to adopt them.
Before you were able to adopt them. And you knew at the time that Elenis was deaf. Is that correct?
Correct.
So you went in knowing that. Yeah.
We did. Yeah. We knew the girls. They were actually in a foster home with a lady that we go to church with. And we would help out with after church care with the girls because she was in school. And so she couldn't get them picked up in time. So Rob and I and the boys would stay after church with the girls until their foster mom was able to come pick them up. And then I would help her out with whenever she needed childcare during the summers and stuff like that, just kind of on the fly, I would fill in for her.
And so, you know, one of the things that I love about you being on our team is that, you know, you have brought awareness to me about special needs adoption and about having empathy for those who are deaf and hard of hearing. You know, those are things that were never part of my world or my life. I hadn't really ever been around anyone who had been deaf or hard of hearing, other than maybe my grandparents, you know, as they got older. And
right.
So it's been great to have you on our team because you brought awareness and helped us to see things that we would never be aware of had you not brought your stories in here with us. So I love that about you being on the team. So, you know, share a little bit about your adoption story. You know, you talked about fostering, that you helped out with the girls some. How did you know it was like, we are supposed to adopt these girls? What was that story?
Well, the girls were, like I said, in our church with a mom who had them in foster care. She was a single mom. And at the time, like I said, we were just kind of helping out and filling in here and there, babysitting when we needed, that type of thing. And the more time we spent with the girls, the more we felt a connection to them. And God just kept telling me, you're supposed to be more to them than just this. Mm. And I just kept putting it off because my husband wanted two kids and we had two kids and he had no intention of having more children than that. And so I just kept putting it off. And then one day I was just up all night long and just couldn't sleep because the Lord just kept telling me, you're supposed to be more to these girls than this. And so I called my husband at work and I asked him to come home, that we needed to talk. And I told him that I felt like God was calling us to adopt these girls, that we needed to be more than that. And he said, that's funny you should say that because I feel the same way.
Wow.
And what's interesting is my husband loves our children and he loves kids, but he's not one of those people that bonds with other people's children.
Right.
But with two girls, it was like an instant bond just watching them after school. So he knew there was something different about them than any other child that we'd been around.
So we
started praying about it. We didn't mention it to anybody for a while. We just prayed about it, just the two of us, just fervent prayer until we knew that we knew that we knew this is what we wanted to do.
Yeah.
Once we got to that point, we talked to the foster mom to see if adoption was what she was planning on doing because the girls had already been living with her for almost 2 years at that point. So we didn't want to come in and take them away if adoption was what she was planning. And when I called her to talk to her about it, she starts crying and saying, I've been praying and praying and asking all of my friends to pray that somebody would adopt these girls, but that I could still be part of their life.
Wow.
So it was like an ideal situation where the girls weren't losing their foster mom. She was still part of their life. And now she got to be like the fun aunt.
Right.
The disciplinarian. So we still have a relationship with her. The girls still see her and talk to her, and she keeps up with us on a regular basis. And if ever I'm having hard days, I know I can call her and talk to her, and she's right there supporting me and encouraging us and lifting us up in prayer on a regular basis. Once we had talked to their foster mom and we knew she wasn't planning to adopt them and that she was on board with trying to work the process to get the girls moved into our foster home, that's when we went to our boys. And at the time, our boys were 7 and 10. So they were pretty young.
Quite close,
and
yeah.
And the girls were 6 and 7 at the time. And so we had talked to the boys, and we weren't quite sure what they were going to think about it. And but when we told them, they were jumping up and down. I knew we were supposed to have them. That's
wow.
Why we get to have them at church all the time. I just knew we were supposed to have them. So they were thrilled. Of course, once they moved in with us, some of that thrill wore off. But at the time, they were very excited about it, and they were on board. I think the hardest part was they weren't allowed to say anything yet. So we had to keep it just within our family for a while until we went through all of the PATH classes to get certified to be a foster home and all of that. And that took a little while to get certified. And then we had to go through the process of having them transferred from one home to another.
Love it. And, you know, I love how you gave it to God. You weren't pushing your agenda. You were just like, what do you want us to do? You weren't really even talking about it. And then God just confirmed it to you and Rob and then to your boys. And I think that's so, so sweet to see how he was behind the scenes, just working everything out just as it needed to be. Now, you've had some really sweet times with the girls, I know. I know that there have been some really, really great memories and great fun things that have happened. But I also know, because I've been friends with you for a long time now, it hasn't always been so easy.
No.
So share whatever you want to about that, but then about how you know, this is what you were supposed to do.
Right. Like she said, there were lots of happy times and we had lots of great family fun. But there were a lot of hard times because they were in foster care. So they were removed from their birth home and all of the emotions and the struggles that come with that. There was abuse, neglect, that type of thing, educational delays. So doing homework was torment. So yeah, we had a lot of days where I would just go in my closet and cry. And I would have to keep remembering back when God said, you're supposed to be more to them than just this.
Yes.
So I know that that's what was supposed to happen. And then we had a really sweet moment when we went to court on the day of parental termination. Everything was going through the court system to terminate parental rights of birth parents so that we could formally adopt. And we were in a different county because the girls originated from a different county. And we're in the courtroom and everything's going through and we get to the end. And we were told before we ever went to court from all of our caseworkers that the judge that was seeing our case was always for the birth family. Which they say, you know, the best place for a child is with the birth family.
Right.
But in this case, that wasn't what was best. But there was a parent that came out that we didn't even know of until the time we went to court. So we went into it knowing that it was possible that we were going to have to work a permanency plan with a parent and delay this whole thing. And we were sitting in the court and the judge got up to go back to the back into his quarters to go over all of the stuff. And the bailiff was in there and he came over because me and Rob and two of our caseworkers were gathered in prayer in the courtroom. And when we finished praying, he came over to us and said, God sent me over to tell you that the judge is a man of God and he's going to do what's right for these girls.
Wow.
And he left and we never saw that man again. And my husband was in the courtroom the whole time and he said he never saw him before that and we never saw him after that.
I've never heard this story. Okay, I have known you for how many years and this is the first time I'm hearing this story.
Sorry.
Wow.
Yeah. So we believe he was an angel, but like I said, Rob never noticed him in the courtroom before that. And then after court, we wanted to go thank him and we never could find him. It was a different bailiff that was there. So we never saw him again. And the judge came out and sure enough, he was in our favor and went ahead and did parental termination. And we were able to file for adoption the very next week. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So what we thought was going to be bumpy ended up not being bumpy.
Not being so bumpy.
And that was another time where God was faithful to us that when we had those hard moments, we would go back to think about that God loved us so much. He sent this man or this angel to come tell us is going to happen. So we always relied on that during all the hard times.
And I think that's so sweet because we as special needs parents, or parents in general, you need that. And I think it's so important to have those reminders of God's faithfulness in those times that he has been faithful and he's shown up and it's like so undeniable. Okay, God's hand was on that, in this situation, so that when those hard days come, you can remember all those amazing things. And I know just from walking this walk with you since I've known you, when those hard times have come, I've heard you talk about saying so many times, just remembering God told us very clearly we were to adopt these girls. They were to be part of our family. And so that just could give you the strength to just get up and keep going.
Right. And we also remind ourselves often that God doesn't call us to adopt for our pleasure. He calls us to adopt to be sure that these girls had him in their life. So he didn't give them to us to make us happy. He brought these girls into our life so that we could train them in his ways.
Beautiful. I love that. Now, your boys, you know, they were young when you adopted them. They were all, they're all pretty close in the same age there.
Yes.
And I know they were excited early on, but was that kind of hard as well as they grew up and the challenges there? I know you have some fabulous kids. And so, I know that there had to have been some hardships for everybody trying to blend this family, bring this family together, especially having the trauma and the behaviors and things that you were bringing into your family.
Right. The boys did fabulous. David, our younger son, he is halfway between the girls. So Elena's and him are the same. And then later, Courtney and him will be the same age. So for 6 months, he's the same age as one of them. And for 3 months, he's the same age as the other. So they're very close in age.
Wow.
So he's probably the one that struggled the most because it was like that constant pick. And he and Courtney were in the same grade. So they were at the same school in the same grade. And David was very, very advanced in school. And Courtney had come out of a bad situation and went into school already educationally delayed. So it was a little bit of a struggle because I would expect David to make straight A's. And if he came home with anything less, I would be like, I can't believe you didn't get an A on this. Right. What happened? And if Courtney came home with a D, I would be celebrating. Yay, you passed.
Right.
So David would be like, what's up with that? That's not fair.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a struggle for him to see the fairness in that when he was younger. Now, you know, he looks back and realizes why that was the way it was. But when you're 10 and 11 years old, fair is something that you think should happen. So they struggled probably the most. But now that they're all adults, they're very close. They text each other pretty regularly. And like I said, Courtney just had a child. We were all over there the other day. Brian came in from out of state to come see his new niece, and David and his wife are there too. So for the most part, everything's usually a big, happy family now that they're adults.
They're adults. They've kind of
grown. As far as kids go, but that's typical children.
Yeah.
But the thing that has been really exciting to me is my son, David, the one who did struggle the most as far as the whole foster thing. He and his wife are going through the Tennessee Key classes to become foster parents.
I love that.
So it just makes my heart so happy to know that he knows the good, the bad, the ugly, and still willing to do it because he knows how much better my girls are in the life that they had than what they would have been in. So he and his wife are in the process of that right now. And hopefully by December, they'll have their first placement.
That is beautiful, Chris. And I just absolutely love that. And I love that, you know, you have the perspective as a mom who has helped with siblings, you know, helped them navigate all this. And I think that's part of what you do with us here at Rising Above is leading the sibling groups that we have, the online groups that we have going on. And I know that you're seeing some of those same conversations get to take place there. And so, you know, we'll put information about our sibling group in the show notes because I think it's so important for siblings to have that. Your boys didn't have an outlet, I would think.
They didn't, no. We just made it within our own home. I would have, like, for their instead of a reward like going to the store to buy a gift, their reward would be they got to go grocery shopping with mom all by themselves. Mm. And they thought that was the greatest thing ever. Right. Or we'd go to McDonald's and get an ice cream cone, just me and one of the boys. So, yeah. And we worked very hard, and Rob did the same thing. He would do breakfast on Sunday morning. He would take one child to breakfast every Sunday morning. They'd go to IHOP and it would just be one-on-one. And he would have 1 week with Brian, 1 week with David, 1 week with Courtney, 1 week with Alanis, and then start again. And he did that for years. And they still remember that.
So I think it's such an important thing to make sure every person in the family feels seen and loved and acknowledged. And you right. guys set a great example for that. Now, we talked about when we started about Alanis and mm-hmm. Alanis being deaf. And so, you know, when you were fostering her, did you all have any training? Did you have any, like, what did that look like? Because I know what I have seen with me being here at Rising Above and working with you, I have learned so much about it's a totally different language. And it's a language, when you're hearing impaired, it's a language that most people here don't understand. It's like having you being in a foreign country. Right. And not being able to communicate. And I've seen that over and over and over again just in your experience. So what was that like for you and Rob and your boys mm-hmm. having this young little girl come into your home that is her form of communication? And did she know sign at the time?
Well, when she went into foster care, her first placement, we were her third placement. So by the time she got to us, she was learning a little bit. But her behaviors were so outrageous at that time that it took the first whole year of school year just to get her to be able to sit in a chair mm-hmm. and focus at all. So it took till the second year before the language even started developing. And when I was in college, I took a sign language class just as an elective, just for fun. Now when I look back, I see it was God preparing me for this yeah. moment.
Yes.
But at the time, I just took it because I thought it was fun and interesting, and I needed one more credit hour to be considered full-time. So I took it. And so when she moved in with us, there was a college student who was fairly fluent in sign language. So she started teaching us, and the boys picked it up really quick. Courtney learned it pretty quick. Rob's probably the worst of all of us. He'll admit it. He's terrible at it. By the time the thought comes into his mind of what he wants to say, Alanis had already moved on to something else. So he's got the hardest part of it. But what happened with her was her skills were so low that I was able to catch up to where she was. And then mm-hmm. we kind of worked together learning.
Worked together, right.
Yeah. And our school system was so good that I was fortunate that I was a stay-at-home mom. So on Monday mornings when I would drop the kids off to school, I'd go in and I'd meet with her language specialist, and she would teach me all of the spelling words, all of the reading words, all of the social studies words, the math words, and the science vocabulary so that I could study with her at home. So I would have a real quick lesson, about an hour to an hour and a half lesson every Monday morning, teaching me all of the signs so that I could work with Alanis at home when it came time to do homework, because it was very hard to do homework when you didn't know the signs for the words. So they were very, very good in helping me with that. And then we just kept learning that way through the school system and through the young lady at our church that knew sign language.
It's amazing. And so she stayed in school here for a while. Mm-hmm. And then you all made the decision together that it was going to be best for her to go to Tennessee School for the Deaf. So I know that had to be a transition and a challenge and that whole process. But what did that look like for you guys, and how did that benefit her?
Right. Well, we knew at some point that was probably going to be the way we needed to go, just because as good as our school system is and as great as the interpreters are here, she always had an interpreter who had her back, and she did have behavioral issues. So she would do something to one of her classmates, or lie or steal or something like that, and the interpreter would help smooth it over. She never had to face those consequences.
Okay.
Because, you know, the interpreter would say, well, she didn't mean to do that. Or the teachers would pet her like, oh, she didn't mean to do that. She couldn't help it. That type of thing. Well, when we did end up, we moved her to Tennessee School for the Deaf in sixth grade. And the first couple weeks she was there, she found out really quick that everybody's deaf. So there's not that, oh, poor little Elena's type thing going on. And she had to face actual consequences when she did things to her peers. The teachers and the staff did not step in. You had to take care of it like any other child would. So socially, she grew tremendously when she moved from public school to Tennessee School for the Deaf. She learned a lot of lessons pretty quick, and it helped her to grow. But she was also able to participate in sports once she moved to TSD. She's very athletic, and every time she'd try out for a team, she wouldn't make the team because she couldn't follow the directions because the directions were all verbal.
Right.
So at TSD, all the students are deaf. Most of the staff is deaf. And everybody on the entire campus, including the security and the nurses and the infirmary, they all sign. Whether they're deaf or not, every person on campus signs. So when they were playing sports, everything was done in sign language. When they, you know, when they did anything, it was in sign language. So she grew a lot emotionally and socially, and then educationally, she was able to learn the way she needed to learn because even though in the public school setting, a funny story, I insisted on a teacher that I just knew that she needed to have because all of my other kids had her and she was so fantastic. And she's probably my favorite teacher that any of my kids have ever had. So I insisted that's who I wanted Elena's to be with. And then once Elena's was in that class, she did horrible. Well, what I love so much about that teacher was she did so many of the things, teaching it to songs and dances and things like that, which is great for my hearing kids. My deaf child got nothing out of that.
Yes.
And she was like, I don't get it. I don't know. I don't know why they're doing this. Why are they waving their hands? So she wasn't able to learn the way that the teacher was teaching, even with an interpreter.
Right.
It wasn't translating to what she needed educationally. So we ended up having to move her to a different teacher. And that was the one and only time that I ever insisted on a teacher. I thought, from now on, it's in God's hand.
You'll let God handle that one.
Take my hand right out of that one. But at TSD, what was so great was they didn't have to have an interpreter for the class because the teacher taught in sign language. So everything was done at the speed that it needed to be taught and at the level it needed to be taught. And if you didn't understand something, it was re-explained to you in sign language. And if you didn't get it, peers might get it and your peer could teach it to you. Whereas in the public school setting, she never could have that peer-to-peer interaction because her peers didn't know sign language.
Yes.
So it was very helpful. It was definitely something that we prayed long and hard about and that we felt good about. And it was difficult because it was away from home. So she would travel from here to Knoxville by bus on Sunday and come home on Friday. So I would try to go down there once a week in the middle of the week and take her out for dinner. And I'd go for all of her. If she had an IEP meeting or any special events when she played sports, I would try to go. But not everyone has the ability to be able to do that. Because a lot of parents have to work or they live further away than an hour and a half.
Right.
So they weren't able to. What was real great was my son, Brian, when he went to college, the college he chose was in Knoxville. So that was nice because he could go over and pick her up anytime he wanted to and take her out to dinner or go to any of her sporting events and things like that. So it was really nice.
Yeah, that was a win-win. One of the things that I think that I have learned more so here in the last couple of years since she has been out of school is her being here and seeing the challenges, the daily challenges, the things that she encounters for not being able to hear. Right. And things like something today you had to leave the office for a little bit to go. So share a little bit about that and about those challenges and struggles that if you don't live this life, it's just like people who are not a special needs parent, who are not like me, a solo parent. I would not know how to relate if I wasn't living that life. So if you don't live this life, you can't truly grasp what it's like for someone else. But I'd love for you to give us a glimpse because it's things I never would have thought of because I don't live that life.
Right. Well, with Elena's, she's deaf, but she doesn't have other developmental delays or anything like that. So she functions on her own. She has her own apartment. Went to school, had a job, getting married in 38 days, I think. So, I mean, she's living a typical life of what you would think. And everybody thinks, oh, this is easy for her. She's doing great, which she is doing great. But the hard part is every time she has a step to make, she needs an interpreter to be there because she can't understand what someone's telling her. Or I have to be there.
Right.
And when she was a child, having mom there wasn't a big deal. But as an adult, she wants independence. And we live in a community where there are no certified interpreters. We have lots of interpreters in the school system who are fabulous, but they're not certified. Mm. So if it's something to do with like SSI or medical or legal issue, it has to be a certified interpreter or a parent. So I can't ask one of them to come in and do it. And to get an interpreter that's certified, they come from either Knoxville or Nashville, which is an hour and a half away, and you have to make an appointment, and you might wait 3 to 4 weeks before you ever get on the calendar to have the interpreter to come in.
Wow.
So if it's something that needs to be done right then, there's no way to get an interpreter to do it. Yeah. So I end up having to do it. And then she gets frustrated because she doesn't want to be dependent on me.
Right.
But she is dependent on me.
Right.
So it gets very frustrating for her. And it's hard because like today, what you were saying, I'm here at work trying to get things done. And she calls because she was having something happen at the bank and she couldn't tell them what it was she needed done. And I had to leave to go interpret at the bank for her, which ended up being something very, very simple, but they just couldn't communicate it.
Couldn't communicate. And yeah. Even like I know, like even ordering food at a restaurant.
Yes.
I know there's been many times you have gone with her to order, order food because
to go through a fast food drive. Just can't do it. So during COVID, she couldn't order food through a drive-through. What they have to do is she has to just drive around straight to the window. And then when she gets there, she just has it typed into her phone and holds it up to them. This is what she wants. Most people are good about that. But then there's sometimes when you get to the window and they don't treat her very nicely at all because she didn't order at the window. So now it's messed up their line in their mind, and they're just most of them teenagers working there. So in their mind, it's messed up their whole system. Mm-hmm. But it's the only way she can order. The apps have helped a lot. It's come a long way as far as now she can order by app and do it with a debit card and she doesn't have to even have communication. So that has helped. But up until there were apps, that was not, she couldn't do that on her own. If she goes out to a restaurant, she just has to point to what she wants on the menu. And people sometimes treat her like she's not smart.
Right.
Because she's not communicating with them. Or like one time she was pumping gas at the gas station and someone was talking to her and she wasn't answering them. And they made a really ugly comment to her. And I was sitting in the car, heard it.
Wow.
And I was like, well, she's deaf. And they're like, yeah, right. As though I was making that up. And I was like, no, she's truly deaf. And when I signed to her and told them that this person was talking to her, she was like, oh, and turned around to ask what they wanted. But if they don't know that, there's no way to know you're deaf just by looking at a person.
Right. Well, that kind of goes straight into some things I want to talk about etiquette-wise.
Mm-hmm.
What are some things that we need to know when we are trying to communicate with someone who's hearing impaired or deaf? What are some special needs etiquette related to being deaf or hard of hearing?
Right. If you know that the person's deaf or hard of hearing, then you already can acknowledge it. If you're trying to get their attention, the best way to do it is to wave your hands. they prefer you waving your hands in front of them to get their attention over being tapped because you might scare them.
Yes.
And some people just don't like to be touched. If waving your hands doesn't work, then some tapping on the shoulder is usually okay. But typically you just tap on the shoulder one time and then wait. Always make sure you're facing them. The majority of hearing impaired and deaf people read lips. So you want to make sure that you're facing them. If you're outside, you want to make sure that you don't have your back to the sun, because then they're looking at your face and the sun's in their eyes.
Wow. See, I wouldn't have thought about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you want to make sure that you as the hearing person is facing the sun, so that the deaf person is not looking into the sun and they can still see your lips.
Good to know.
So, also speaking slowly, if they ask you to repeat yourself, just repeat it without being rude about it.
Some I was getting ready to say, I mean, I could see some people being rude about that.
Yeah. You know? And they're just like, whatever, and walk
right,
off,
right.
You know, because they couldn't follow along with you or saying. If there's multiple people in a room and you're talking to someone who's deaf and hard of hearing, it's better to move out of that area, because if they do have hearing aids or a cochlear implant, when there's multiple people talking at the same time, your voice is not distinguishable.
Mm.
So when Elena has her cochlear on, she can tell sound, but she can't tell where it's coming from. So if I'm talking and I'm standing in front of her and you're talking standing behind her, it's going into her cochlear system at the exact same tone, and it's going straight to her brain, not through the ear. It goes straight to the brain. So there's no way to tell where that voice is coming from.
Wow.
So it's better to be right in front of them, move them out of a crowded area to speak to them. And if they sign to you and you don't know sign, don't pretend that you do. Some people like to pretend they know it, and then they make up signs, and it comes off offensive when you're making up signs.
Right.
And then another thing that we run into a lot when someone speaks to her, or like when I was taking her around with to apply for jobs, we would go in and I would just be the interpreter. I didn't even tell them I was her mother. I just went in as her interpreter, and Elenis would introduce herself, say, "Hi, I'm Elenis. I'm here to apply for this job. This is my interpreter." And as soon as they knew that she was deaf, people would immediately turn away from her and turn to me and ask me the questions.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not the one being hired. It's her. So I would keep gearing them back to her. So if somebody has an interpreter with them, you still need to face the person who's deaf and talk to them, because they're still reading your lips. And if you're turned to look at the interpreter instead of that person, they're missing a lot of the conversation. Yeah. And then they don't want anything to do with that conversation if you're not even willing to acknowledge them. So,
and you know, I think it's good just to envision yourself going into a foreign country where you're the only one there who does not know the language, and how you would feel.
Right.
Trying to communicate and not being able to, how frustrating that must be.
Right. Well, and within the deaf and hard of hearing, you even have foreign language.
We talked about, share about that, because we talked about that earlier.
When Elenis went to public school here in our town, she learned signed exact English, which is SEE. And it is signing word for word with your prefixes and suffixes, your all the articles, the prepositions. You signed everything word for word as you would speak it. That's signed exact English. And every single word has its own individual sign. Well, when she transferred to TSD, TSD uses ASL, American Sign Language, which is similar, but it's different enough that it was confusing. They don't use any of the prefixes and suffixes. Some signs are used for multiple words. So where we had a separate sign for every word, this one you use the same sign, and it could mean five different words, and you just have to know from context. And then in ASL, it's also signed a little bit in reverse, where sometimes the subject will be before a verb or vice versa, and it would sound backwards.
Okay. Well,
that's what Elenis prefers now. She prefers the ASL just because it's easier to sign and it's a lot faster. But then the problem with it is when she texts or if she writes something,
right,
that's how she writes and texts because that's her language. And then it comes across to somebody that's not deaf or hard of hearing. They think that she's not smart,
right,
because her sentences are written like that. And really, she's extremely smart, but that's her language. And people automatically assume she's not smart because her sentence structure is off, but mm-hmm. her sentence structure is exactly what ASL is, and that's her language. And now there's another sign language that's becoming popular called CASE, which is conceptual sign, where it's more of signing the concept of the word. So rather than saying the actual word, you're signing what that word or what that phrase means conceptually. So wow. It's a little bit different too.
Yeah.
So it's interesting when you meet somebody else that's deaf and you start signing and they're like, oh, you're using old sign or you're using this sign or you're using that sign. And I have to think really hard, who am I signing to as to know which sign language to use?
But, and so you are versed in many different forms of sign language. So that's...
I haven't learned CASE yet. I haven't learned that. That's fairly new for this area. So I haven't been involved in it very much. I can understand it if somebody is signing in conceptual, but I don't know how to sign it. So I usually sign back to them in ASL or what we call Pidgin. I use ASL and SEE combined, which is called Pidgin, where you just kind of mix all of them together and you get what you get.
That's
more what I do.
Well, you know, like I said, it's been very eye-opening for me. Just the things I've learned, seeing you and Elena's interact and seeing the needs that have come up that I would have never thought of.
Yeah.
And some of the trials and struggles that you guys encounter just trying to do daily things.
Yeah. Well, technology has helped some. Like, there's been a couple times that I go to the doctor and I wasn't able to be there. Like, I was out of town or something. And she was able to FaceTime me.
Yes.
The nurse practitioner would be in the room and would ask her the questions and I would sign them to Elena's through FaceTime. So that's been helpful to where I know now that if I can't get there to interpret, at least I know she can FaceTime me and I can still help her without having to physically be there. So technology's really helped in that way.
Yeah.
But some folks aren't. Of course, if it's a legal matter, they probably wouldn't allow a FaceTime because then it's open into cyberspace. So I haven't come across that yet. Anytime it's been anything legal, I've always just been there.
Well, I think it's so neat. You talked about her getting married in a few weeks and her wedding ceremony is going to be pretty sweet. Tell us about what that's going to look like.
Yeah, her fiance is also deaf. They met at Tennessee School for the Deaf, so they've known each other a long time. But there's a pastor here in town who was a missionary for many years, and one of his missions was deaf ministry. So we contacted him because I really wanted them to be able to have the wedding and it be for them, not delayed with an interpreter. Mm-hmm. So we contacted him to see if he would be willing to do their wedding. So he's going to do the whole wedding in sign language so that they can follow along. And the one who will be all of us hearing people because we'll have somebody interpreting the sign language to us. So they'll have it in their time and it'll be directly for them. So they're pretty excited about that. They've been meeting with him regularly and, it turned out to be a perfect setting because when I contacted him, he was feeling like his ministry of deaf ministry was being lost at the moment because he didn't have anyone to minister to. So it uplifted him at the same time. So they're very excited about it.
And we're actually having them on the show, the podcast, here soon. They'll be guests, the pastor you're talking about. They are a future guest on the podcast.
Oh, great.
So that'll be neat. But
yeah.
Well, Chris, so as we close out, what is like one little bit of wisdom you would share with us? Something that you want people, our listeners, to know about people who may be deaf or hard of hearing?
Okay. I would say that just because somebody is deaf or hard of hearing does not mean that they're incapable of living a a good and strong and prosperous life. Mm-hmm. They can do everything that we can do, sometimes even better because their other senses are stronger. So just because they're deaf or hard of hearing, don't count them out. Yeah. They can do all things. And we just need to make sure that we're there supporting them and lifting them up and not discouraging them and saying they can't.
Mm. Good words. Good words. Well, Chris, thank you for your
time. Thanks for having me.
Sharing part of your story. And I know that you're going to go back and listen to this episode because you love all things podcast. So you on our staff are the one who doesn't really listen to podcasts, but I'm trusting that you'll go and listen to this one. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. No. So I appreciate you being here, and I love hearing your story, and I loved getting to learn some things I didn't know until today. So thanks for
having me.
You're in your heart. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to the Rising Above Ministries podcast. We would like to thank Jimmy Thorpe and Patrick Mayberry for providing the music for our podcast today. If you like what you hear, please take a minute to leave us a rating and review. This helps others like you find our content more easily. You can learn more about how Rising Above Ministries is encouraging the special needs community by checking out our website at risingaboveministries.org or by finding us on Facebook and Instagram. We look forward to connecting with you.